Blog Talk Radio.
The following program contains material which may be considered offensive to some listeners and outright disturbing to others. The views, opinions, positions, or strategies expressed in this program are solely the thought property of Art Underground, who accepts no liability for the content of this program or for the consequences of any actions taken on the basis of the information provided. This program will contain strong language, pervasive writing, thematic elements, mild perpetuity, and general insanity. Listening to the program may or may not induce and or cause headaches, migraines, difficulty breathing, bleeding of the nose, mild antisocial personality disorder, failing faith in humanity syndrome, temporary blindness, sudden panic attacks, confusion, rapid pulse, dizziness, hissy fits, loss of appetite, and may even induce fits of rage. And while listener discretion is advised, the host is apathetic, unconcerned, and uninterested with any of the above problems that you may experience. We simply could not give less of a shit if we tried to. Enjoy!
There's a storm coming. Are you ready? Are you prepared? You damn well better be. This storm here, she ain't nothing like you've ever seen before. So grab hold of your bootstraps and hold on tight. This is gonna be one bumpy damn ride.
Good evening and welcome, everyone. This is American Renegade. I'm your host, Art Underground. It is May 25th, 2020. As I get my volume set on my live feed, so I will be able to follow along and know if there's any audio issues that may arise as we go through the broadcast this evening. As promised on Friday, the primary focus for our discussion this evening will be the evidence that in many ways suggests that there may well have been a conspiracy of a nature so heinous that it's almost impossible to believe that anyone could be so twisted as to actually try to make it a reality. Now, it's very important we look at these issues because those of us who are aware of the various conspiracies that the government, not only just here in the United States, but governments all around the world and their various agencies and others have been engaged in for the past 100+ years, it isn't hard to believe that there could in some way be connections between the big money elites, governments, and their various agencies, and so on, and this coronavirus, this COVID-19 or the SARS-CoV-2, and it spread throughout the world. Tonight we'll look at the history, a timeline beginning in 1997, and we will move forward through the years examining, in the short amount of time that we have, to the best of our ability, the legislative acts that have been passed, executive orders, exercises, drills, simulations, and so on, that will show that this outbreak may not have been the big surprise that many would like us to believe, and that many people knew a lot more than they would like to admit, and that they knew a lot earlier than they would admit. So, is there a conspiracy in play here? Is there a move by the big money elites and the deep state globalists to begin the process of depopulation of the planet? Remember, the Georgia Guidestones has 12 planks, and the very first one is to maintain a population worldwide no more than 500 million. So So is this the beginning of an attempt to depopulate the planet? Keep in mind, 2010, at the TED conference, Bill Gates actually made mention that the world population was at 7 billion and very rapidly moving toward 9 billion. But if we did a good job with health care, vaccines, and reproductive care, we could reduce that number 10 to 15%. So what is the true agenda being driven here? Well, that's not for me to say. It's up to you to decide what you want to believe. I simply bring you the information based on my research and let you, the listening audience, decide for yourself what you want to believe. Now, for several weeks, I have been laying out a very basic timeline beginning in 2005 with some of the more basic, more directly connected events. Not really thinking much about legislative acts and executive orders and such things as that. Until I read an article that was published, I guess I read right there the very end of April. And it was an article put out by Makia Freeman. And Makia Freeman is editor of alternative media, independent news site, The Freedom Articles, and senior researcher at toolsforfreedom.com. And after reading Makia's article, and you can find it on freedomarticles.com, in fact, I'm going to drop that link in the chat room. And we're not going to load up links tonight, I don't think, like we did in our Spreaker broadcast last night. But we may have a few more links as we go through here. But the link there in the chat room is the direct link to the article published in the freedomarticles.com by Makia Freeman that got me started putting together this very extensive, very detailed timeline beginning in 1977. So we have a lot to get to in a very short amount of time. And I don't know if we're going to be taking calls tonight, but if we have time, I will let you know. But in the meantime, please don't call unless I specifically ask for it, because I've got a lot to get to here, and I don't know if we'll even be able to get to it all. And if we don't get to it all, we'll pick up tomorrow night where we left off. So what you're going to hear tonight will be, one, two, three, four, five, six, 7, 8, 9, 10, or I'm sorry, 9 events that, 9 simulations, drills, and laws that Makia had put together in this article. But you're going to hear a lot more than that, because I'm going to add 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, something like 13 more things to it, or 13 or so, might actually be more than that. I don't know. I just lost count. So I'm going to start with a comment from the article, and then we're going to get into the timeline, and it begins in 1997. The beginning of the article goes like this. They planned and prepared for the coronavirus decades in advance. The infrastructure has been clearly set up over the last 2+ decades to ensure that when Operation Coronavirus went live, all of the pieces would be in place to bamboozle and enslave the people, forcing them into a place where they would gladly accept or even beg for mass vaccination. Operation Coronavirus resembles a false flag op in many ways. One similarity is that it was meticulously planned for long in advance. Astute readers may notice another similarity, the phenomenon of the drill going live. Remember Mike Pompeo not long ago talking about the coronavirus when he said, we are in a live exercise. Now, this crops up in so many false flag events, such as the exact scenario being trained and prepared for in an exercise occurs in the real world. A perfect example of that are the London subway bombings or the Boston Marathon bombing. Two perfectly good examples of a drill going live. Now, we're going to go through a list of various simulations, drills, exercise, papers, such as legislations and executive orders, and scenarios and laws that all in some way either anticipated and prepared for the coronavirus pandemic or by some odd set of circumstances find themselves connected, intended or not. Now, the first one is the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Now, this dates October 28, 1977, and the International Emergencies Atomic or Economic Power Act, IEEPA, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, IEEPA, Title II of Public Law 95-223, 91, Stat 1622, enacted October 8, 1977. Now, as we go through these, I'm going to give you, like I did here, Title II, Public Law 95-223, 91, Stat 1626. This is where you'll find the evidence of what I'm talking about. And we'll do this all the way through. Executive orders will be called by numbers. We're going to break this down, make the research easy for you to verify what I'm telling you is true. I always believe that trust but verify. Don't take anything I or anyone else says for gospel. Verify it for yourself. So this IEEPA is a United States federal law authorizing the president to regulate commerce after declaring a national emergency in response to any unusual and extraordinary threat to the United States, which has a foreign source. Coronavirus from China, or so we're led to believe. Executive Order 12127, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, March 31st, 1979. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including Section 304 of Reorganization Plan Number 3 of 1978, and in order to provide for the orderly activation of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is hereby ordered as follows. And it goes through the establishment and the setting of the transfer of duties to FEMA. This is what set up this is what gave the ability to issue Executive Order 12148, which again, Federal Emergency Management, but not agency, just Federal Emergency Management, July 20th, 1979, just 2 months later. Executive Order 12148 was an executive order enacted by President Jimmy Carter on July 20th, 1979, to transfer and reassign duties to the newly formed agency known as the Federal Emergency Management Agency, created by Executive Order 12127, which I just read to you. The order combined several federal agencies' tasks with emergency preparedness and civil defense spread across the executive departments to a unified entity that was established as an independent agency free of cabinet interference with authority as the lead federal agency in a presidentially declared disaster. So you had the Executive Order 12127, which established FEMA, and then Executive Order 12148, which brought all these various agencies together, put them under the control of FEMA as an independent agency free from cabinet interference, meaning free from White House interference. Also, something to note, if you look at one of the patches, it says U.S. Police, United States Police. They are the federal police force for the United States. But they have military powers, which is very scary. I see Green Beasley in the chat room. Welcome. Then we have the Executive Order 12919, which is the National Defense Industrial Resource Preparedness Act, which went into effect on June 3rd, 1994. Now, as amended, this act delegates authorities and addresses national defense industrial resource policies and programs under the Defense Production Act, which, by the way, had been amended in October 2009 under Obama. Now, I could tell you exactly what's in this, but you might not like what you hear. So if you really want to know what it is, I encourage you, go look it up, Executive Order 12919. And here a little bit later, we'll get into the National Resource Preparedness Act, which is a different act but goes hand in hand with this one. So remember, Trump also has invoked what we'll be talking about in a little bit, the Defense Production Act, twice in just 2 months. And all of this is connected. So, and by him invoking the Defense Production Act, it gives him the ability to call into effect the full power of the National Defense Industrial Resource Preparedness Act, also known as 12919, which is what we're talking about here. The next thing up in our timeline is June 2001. So this is an exercise known as Dark Winter. Now, the ruling class and the U.S. government have been carrying out drills or simulations for pandemics for a long time. In June 2001, they conducted an operation known as Dark Winter, which simulates a biowarfare anthrax attack by a strange coincidence. Remember, we talked about drills going live. By some strange coincidence in June 2001, all right, remember that, such anthrax attack actually happened after September 11th. Remember the anthrax popping up in Boca Raton, Florida? And you were able to trace that strain right back to Fort Detrick's weapons lab. And we'll get to that a little bit later, too. Now, by another strange coincidence, the Johns Hopkins organization was involved in this as well, like they were some of the others we'll be talking about a little later. They also just happened to be involved in Event 201, which we'll be talking about later. Now, the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security summarizes Dark Winter as an exercise which portrayed a fictional scenario depicting a covert smallpox attack on U.S. citizens. The scenario is set in three successive NSC meetings that took place over 2 weeks. The exercise was held at Andrews Air Force Base, Washington, D.C. Johns Hopkins is responsible for the official COVID-19 case and death count map. Now, Whitney Webb did a piece on Dark Winter and points out how government insiders had foreknowledge of the COVID-19 crisis on a scale that thus far has gone unreported, and that those same insiders are now manipulating the government's response and public panic in order to reap record profits and gain unprecedented power for themselves. She writes, upon further investigation, key leaders of both Event 201 and Crimson Contagion, which we'll talk about a little later as well, not only have deep and longstanding ties to U.S. intelligence and the U.S. Department of Defense, they were also previously involved at that same time, June 2001 exercise, Dark Winter. Some of these same individuals
would also play a role in the FBI's sabotaged investigation of the subsequent anthrax attacks and are now handling major aspects of the U.S. government's response to the COVID-19 crisis. One of those individuals, Robert Kadlec, was recently put in charge of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services' entire COVID-19 response efforts, despite the fact that he was recently and directly responsible for actions that needlessly infected Americans with COVID-19. Other major players in Dark Winter are now key drivers behind the biodefense mass surveillance programs currently being promoted as a technological solution to COVID-19 spread, despite evidence that such programs actually worsen pandemic outbreaks. Others still have close connections to the insider trading that recently occurred among a select group of U.S. senators, and we'll get to that a little bit later as well, regarding the economic impact of COVID-19, and are set to personally profit from lucrative contracts to develop not just one, but the majority of experimental COVID-19 treatments and vaccines currently under development by U.S. companies, quote, unquote. That's a mouthful. So now we move a little also in 2001, the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. Remember, we're still under the Bush administration here. Now, this particular act is a public health originally drafted by the CDC with the intention of getting the 50 states to enact similar legislation. It included sweeping and draconian legislation using forced vaccination as a response to epidemics, pandemics, and bioterrorism. It is crucial to realize that the CDC owns patents on several vaccines, so functions as a giant vaccine company as much as, or even more so, than a governmental agency. According to the ACLU, quote, the act lets a governor declare a state of emergency unilaterally and without judicial oversight, fails to provide modern due process procedures for quarantine and other emergency powers. It lacks adequate compensation for seizure of assets and contains no checks on the power to order forced treatment and vaccination. The acts include an overbroad definition of public health emergency that sweeps in HIV, AIDS, and other diseases that clearly do not justify quarantine, forced treatment, or any of the other broad emergencies authorities that would be granted under the act. It requires the disclosure of massive amounts of personally identifiable health information to public health authorities without requiring basic privacy protections, end quote. And what did we see with this COVID? Governors declaring basically a state of emergency and doing all of this stuff with no oversight. Wonder why we had the problems that we've had through this whole ordeal. Okay. Now, according to Wikipedia, quote, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons claimed that the draft used sweeping language to the extent that it could turn governors into dictators, since this act gave governors the authority to declare public health emergencies and afterward force vaccinations on the general public without their informed consent. The deployment of state national guards could be used to administer the vaccines or substances. Legal liabilities for drug companies which manufactured the vaccines and or substances were removed, end quote. And with regards to the forced vaccinations, there was an interesting Supreme Court case in 1905. It was Jacobson. Let me look this up real quick. I believe it was Jacobson versus Massachusetts. Jacobson versus Massachusetts, and it was on the issue of forced vaccines. And the court actually did state that if it was deemed in the best interest of the population, of the general public, you could be forced. They could literally strap you down if they wanted to and vaccinate you. Now, that's some scary stuff right there, don't you think? Now, keep in mind, folks, I'm not really reading from an article here. This is my own research that I've done to create this incredible timeline of events, legislation, exercises, drills, simulations, laws, executive orders, and so on, leading all the way up to what we see happening right now. And I've got the documentation to prove everything I'm saying. Copies of the legislation, copies of the executive orders, copies of the professional writings. I've got it all. I've got a hell of a dossier on everything I'm talking about here. The next thing up was one other thing here, also from Wikipedia. As of 2007, 33 states had introduced 133 legislative bills or resolutions that were based upon or featured provisions related to the articles or sections of this act, the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. Of these, 48 have passed as of October 1st, 2011, and 40 states have passed various forms of this particular legislation as well. In the chat room, could Joe Biden be a major player? We need to know. Joe Biden has been serving in Congress for how long? He's had a part in every bit of this because he had to either vote yay or nay, right? Think about this. All right. And remember, this timeline began in 1977. How long has Joe Biden been in Congress? You bet your ass he's been involved. So next up, 2004. We're moving forward to the timeline. Again, remember, we started in 1977. So now we come to the Project BioShield Act. Now, this was an act which was passed by Congress in 2004 calling for $5.6 billion for purchasing vaccines that would be used in the event of a bioterrorist attack. It was passed in the years following September 11th and the dark winter predictions. Remember, dark winter predicted an anthrax attack. How did they know? Okay? And they predicted this attack in days of fear over weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons, biological weapons, and so on. This law is classic problem-reaction-solution stuff, otherwise known as Hegelian dialectic. Create a problem, get the reaction from the people, present them with a solution to the problem. And this justifies all sorts of big pharma interventions by playing off the fear of the day. Now, it was basically a 10-year, almost $6 billion plan for the United States government to create and produce vaccines and treatments for anthrax, Ebola, plagues, and other potential bioterrorism agencies. And according to the FAS article, quote, this law has three main provisions. One, relaxing procedure for some CBRN, chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, all right, that's CBRN, terrorism-related spending, including hiring and awarding research grants. Two, guaranteeing a federal government market for new CBRN medical countermeasures. And three, permitting emergency use of unapproved countermeasures. The Department of Health and Human Services has used each of these authorities. They have used expedited review authorities to approve grants relating to developing treatments for radiation exposure and used the authority to guarantee a government market to obligate approximately $2.3 billion to acquire countermeasures against anthrax, botulism, radiation, smallpox. They have also employed the emergency use authority several times, including allowing young children with H1N1 swine flu to receive specific antiviral drugs. Okay? Now, 2005 to 2012. 1,059 pathogens escaped or stolen from Fort Detrick, Maryland, Maryland's bioweapons lab.
Really?
According to the United States CDC, this is coming directly from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. They received 1,059 release reports, an average of an incident every few days involving theft, loss, or some accidental, quote-unquote, release causing an occupational exposure or release outside of primary biocontainment barriers of dangerous pathogens. The New York Times and Western media pilloried China for several small leaks of a virus 10 years ago, but Americans have had 1,059 more serious releases, or I'm sorry, 1,057 more serious releases than did China during the same period. Meaning China only had, from 2005 to 2012, China only had two. Two! China had two compared to the United States Fort Detrick Weapons Biolab, Bioweapons Lab, 1,059. Serious? So now, also in 2005, the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. Where would Big Pharma be without their favorite politicians constantly passing laws to legally protect them from liability arising from their toxic products? In 1986, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Congress passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which set up special courts for the vaccine damage. Now, this act, the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, also known as the PREP Act, codified at 42 U.S. 247D -6D, it gives the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services the power to waive legal liabilities for corporations producing covered countermeasures, i.e. vaccines, in the case of a public health emergency. Now, a PREP Act declaration, effective February 4th, 2020, that's right, just recently, was issued to provide liability immunity for activities related to medical countermeasures, i.e. vaccines, against COVID-19. What does that tell you? That tells you that they're already preparing for you to get, well, for you to be harmed in some way from the vaccine, but they have declared the PREP Act to be in effect so that Big Pharma is protected from being sued if their vaccine happens to make you sick or, heaven forbid, kill you. That's what this act does. We are definitely not going to get through all of this tonight. So what we don't get through tonight, we'll pick up tomorrow. Again, remember, this is a lot of research to put this timeline together and bring to you the evidence that this is not what we're being led to believe. The Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act of 2005. Okay. You need to remember that one. And if you have any family members, for God's sake, don't let them get vaccinated. Me personally, I would rather every member of my family get sick and take the risk of getting sick than to take the vaccine and who knows what might happen to them. Okay, there was in, so now we're coming up to 2010, a Rockefeller Foundation paper that was put out, and some of you may recognize this name, Lockstep. Yeah, you've heard that name before, I'm sure. Some of you have. I know some of you have. In fact, I know some of you personally who have heard about it because you're the ones who told me about it. This is the new normal. This paper analyzed a scenario called lockstep. Now, this is a phrase with negative overtones and suggestive of soldiers, military, and fascism, where they outlined government responses to a rapidly emerging viral pandemic. Now, this paper outlined a scenario where a pandemic has hit and the governments of the world use it to expand their authority and increase their grip on power. Now, although the authors of the paper try to claim they're just imagining, not predicting the future, given the immense role of the Rockefeller family bloodline and the Rockefeller Foundation in pushing the New World Order or the global government, you know, plan, this is a ruse to cover their active plan for crisis scenario that they know is going to happen. Also, a fine example of predictive programming, kind of like the Dark Winter. And the anti, you know, which the Dark Winter was when? 2001? And what did we end up with? The anthrax attacks. Coinky dink? Yeah, I don't think so. I don't believe in coinky dinks. Okay, so now we're up to March 16th, 2012. Executive Order 13603. Remember earlier, I mentioned the National Defense Industrial Resource, the National Industrial Resource Preparedness, the National Defense Industrial Resource Preparedness Act of June 1994. Remember I mentioned that one earlier? Well, remember when I told you we would get to the National Defense Resource Preparedness? A little later on, well, here we are. Now, keep in mind, the Executive Order 12919, which was the National Defense Industrial Resource Preparedness Act, June 3rd, 1994, that set the stage for Executive Order 13603, the National Defense Resource Preparedness. Okay? This is an order of the president. This was Barack Obama. Signed on March 16th, 2012, and the purpose of this executive order was to delegate authority and address national defense resource policies and programs under the Defense Production Act of 1950. You see, we could have gone back a lot farther than 1997, but I knew if we did that, we were going to be here for a week doing this. And believe me, I have got a list of documents of various legislations and acts and executive orders going back to the turn of the century, actually going all the way back to Lincoln. I think I've got some going back. I know I've got them going back into the 1800s. I mean, that's why I tell people I've got the documents and the evidence to prove everything that I say. I don't have to rely on propaganda. I don't have to worry about using other people's talking points because I've got the actual documents. I've got the papers. I've got the writings. And in some cases, I've got the audio clips of the people actually saying this stuff. And if you read, this was everybody call, if you read this National Defense Resource Preparedness Act that Obama signed into play, it literally, I'm not kidding you people, I've actually been a guest on radio broadcasts several years back during the Obama administration, by the way. I had been interviewed several times about some of the things that I research. And I've explained, if you sit down and you read this act, it literally tells the federal government the federal government literally tells the Secretary of State and other various agencies, FEMA, that they can, if you own a farm, if they believe it's in the national interest, like say we're at war or whatever, even they could actually do it right now if they wanted to. They could enact it right now if they felt it necessary. But I don't think things are crazy enough that they would dare try it right now, because I think it's got to get a little bit crazier than it is right now before they even dare to try this. But in this act, it says they can come in, take over a hospital, and now it falls under military control. They can come in, they can seize, if you own a farm, they can seize your farm, take your tractor, your plow, all your livestock, whatever feed you have in silos, and so on, if they believe it's in the best interest of national security. If you own a big chunk of land and they don't have, say, a National Guard in that area and they need to deploy troops to that area and you have a giant piece of land, they can come in and seize that land and build shelters for troops. Yeah. Serious, folks. This is crazy. That's what this act does. Okay. So now we come to 2015. Now this is probably going to be where we're going to have to, we might get this one and one more before we run out of time, and we'll definitely have to pick up tomorrow where we left off. Remember I told you about University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill? I've mentioned this particular thing, I bet you, at least a half a dozen times over the past month. And probably close to a dozen times in the past 2 months. University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. One research team was literally working, trying to combine DNA sequencing from the coronavirus found in the horseshoe bat, which comes from Wuhan, China, by the way, with the virus found in the backbone of another bat. They were trying to do sequencing here, combining DNA. You know, DNA splicing? Playing God? Researchers at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, said a virus in the same family as SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, appears to be able to... This was in 2015! This is from their publication, right? All right. This is from the paper that the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, put a paper out. And this is what they were saying in the paper. They were saying that this virus that come from the horseshoe bat was in the same family as SARS, and appears to be able to affect human respiratory tract cells. The finding came as a surprise because the team thought the virus would have to go through a process known as adaptions, meaning it would have had to acquire the ability to affect human cells by first learning how to infect the cells of another mammal. This is called genetic mutation. It happens all the time in nature, naturally, but not to the degree of this. It's believed, and this is what they say, it's believed that this is how SARS went from being a bat virus. Remember the SARS outbreak back during the Obama administration? Remember that? It's believed that this is how the SARS virus went from being a bat virus to a major international outbreak that affected 8,400 people in 2003, killing at least 916 of them. In the case of SARS, the virus was probably passed from bats to palm civets, and from palm civets, that's P-A-L-M, separate word, C-I-Z-E-T-S, palm civets, to people. This study was published in the Journal of Natural Medicine. The University of North Carolina scientists wanted to see if cousin viruses, in other words, coronaviruses that are carried by the Chinese horseshoe bat, which comes from Wuhan, China, or it comes from the Hubei province, which is where Wuhan is, the Hubei province. But they wanted to see if cousin viruses also posed a threat to people like the SARS virus did. Now, what they did was they used one, it's called an SHC-014. That's what they call it. They used one SHC-014 as a representative group. They inserted a key part of the virus, the spike protein, into a SARS virus and then ran experiments to see if the hybrid could infect human respiratory tract cells in a dish and then in mice that were vulnerable to the SARS virus. And guess what? It did. This, what I mentioned earlier when I first started talking about University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where they were trying to see to combine genetic, what they call splicing, if you will, the one part of the coronavirus from the horseshoe bat with the part of a SARS virus coming from the other bat, the backbone of the other bat. Bing, bang, boom. It did exactly what they wanted to see. Coinky dink. That we have a virtually identical virus now, having worked its way through the world's population in 6 months? Pretty interesting. It's something to consider. Again, I'm just laying out the evidence to support if someone wanted to. This would be the evidence that they would want to use to at least cause people to think that maybe there's more to this than the official story. Now, this brings us to 2017. After Trump had been declared the winner of the 2016 presidential race, just a few days shy of Trump's inauguration, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the United States government's top infectious disease specialist, warned of a surprise outbreak that would occur during the Trump administration and that more needed to be done to prepare for the pandemic. In a speech entitled Pandemic Preparedness in the Next Administration, given at Georgetown University Medical Center, Dr. Fauci delivered just a few days before Trump's inauguration, where he said, quote, "There is no question that there will be a challenge to the upcoming administration in the arena of infectious diseases." Wow. How did he know? How did he know? Fauci, who's overseen the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases since 1984, warned that looming health challenges would involve both chronic diseases, one's already going on, as well as a surprise outbreak. Quote, "No matter what history has told us, definitely that outbreaks will happen. It is a perpetual challenge. It is not going to go away. The thing we're extraordinarily confident about is that we are going to see this in the next few years." End quote. That's a pretty damning statement to make. This in and of itself would cause any intelligent man or woman, or even for that matter, child, to question. Now, he doffed a list of measures needed to prepare for such a climate crisis, including creating and strengthening global health surveillance program systems, as well as a public health and healthcare infrastructure, practicing transparency and honest communication with the public. Oh, there's been a whole lot of that. Coordinating and collaborating on both basic and clinical research, and developing universal platform technologies to better facilitate the development of vaccines. So many people have made is a failure to look beyond our own borders in the issue of the globality of health issues. Not only things that are there that will come here, but surprises that we'll have. End quote. Wow. I think we can squeeze one more in here. 2017. January 2017. Same time period. Right around the same time that Anthony Fauci gave his speech there. U.S. NORTHCOM. That's the United States Northern Command. U.S. NORTHCOM. Branch Plan 3560. January 2017. This unclassified U.S. military paper from NORTHCOM warned of a possible novel influenza disease that could strike the United States and leave it unprepared. It outlines a planned and coordinated response to an infectious disease outbreak involving numerous governmental agencies such as the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, the United States Drug Association, the USDA, the Health and Human Services, and even NGOs like USAID. DHS, FEMA, USDA, HHS, and even NGOs like USAID. Again, Anthony Fauci and U.S. NORTHCOM both warning of a novel outbreak. Now, they said, NORTHCOM said, a possible novel influenza. But this COVID-19 is not an influenza. It is a coronavirus. Novel simply means new. Okay, that's all we have time for tonight, but we still have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, and 5 is really long. 6. We still have 6 things to get to. So we'll pick that up tomorrow. Like I said, I'm not here to make any kind of allegations or accusations. I am simply here to provide for you the information that suggests that there may have actually been a conspiracy here, and that this may well have been planned for quite some time, and the pieces just being put in place over many years. And now they're trying to checkmate, if you will. But I'm going to leave it to you to decide for yourself what you want to believe. Again, I have all of the documentation, all the evidence, and all the everything I need to prove everything I'm saying here. And I dare anybody to try to prove me wrong. That's all we have time for tonight. I invite everyone, check out Spreaker.com. The channel is Ideas Are Bulletproof. Sunday, 7 p.m., me, 7 to 10. American Renegade Without Underground, 3 hours on that channel there. Tuesday, Suzette Live Talk, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern. Wednesday Night Instrumentals from 7 to 10, 3 hours of karaoke-style music. Thursday night, RZ's Tunes, RZ playing you some music from his personal collection for however long he decides to do it. Friday night, spend the night with Smokey as he plays for you some of his favorite music. And then on Saturday, RZ's Free Speech Zone, and you just never know where he's going to go. All of those, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Sunday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Sunday, of course, 3 hours of what we do here on Blog Talk in 1 hour, but we do it for 3 hours, and then Wednesday night instrumentals. Check them out. Again, at Spreaker.com, the channel is Ideas Are Bulletproof Radio. With that, I want to thank everyone for joining me this evening, whether you listen live or in the archives. Subscribe, like, all that good stuff. If you're interested and you want to get on the advanced mailing notice where you will receive an email every evening before, with at least a couple hours before going live, explaining to you what we'll be discussing, you can send an email to One American Renegade. That's the number one, American Renegade, at gmail.com. Tell me you want to get on the email list. And again, all you're ever going to get from me is going to be advance notice of the upcoming broadcast. That's all you're going to get. You won't get anything else from me, unless you start emailing me with articles and such as that, and then I'll respond. I'll consider you want to be a little bit more involved. But with that, I want to thank everyone for joining me this evening. Hope it's been educational, informative. I doubt any of this was entertaining. Please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, no matter how hard they work to intimidate you, don't ever be afraid to stand up, speak out, and let your voice be heard. For American Renegade, I'm Art Underground. Be safe out there. Yeah.